everyone. It's the spring edition of the 99 for the One Spotlight. As we're changing seasons, some of us experienced a rough winter, and we're beginning to see the first signs that spring is actually happening. Opening day for baseball, spring breaks are happening, plans for Easter are taking shape. It's such an encouraging time. So many people have experienced challenges that seem like things would never get better. You know, like those long winters that we have here in the Midwest and the North where the snow just kept coming. Life can feel like it's heaping on top of us. And we hear callers that are in those seasons and they need direction and hope for a better life, a new life. You know, scripture reminds us in Isaiah 43:18, forget all of that. It's nothing compared to what I'm going to do, for I'm about to do something new. See, I've already begun. Do you not see it? I will make a pathway through the wilderness. I will create rivers in the dry wasteland. Just when we think there's no way, God makes a way through the wilderness and he does something new. And how does this happen? Paul reminds us in those difficult times, instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on your new nature, created to be like God, truly righteous and holy. That's from Ephesians 4:23-24. So I thought with all of the new that comes with spring, I would feature the openings of our New Life Live program. In case you didn't know, the first segment of the program, our amazing co-hosts share something that's on their mind or on their heart, and they want you to know. So this features those opening segments, sort of like spring, a beginning. First, we're going to begin with Dr. Alice Benton. She will share about boundaries, and then we'll hear from Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer and Dr. Jackie Mac-Harris and the power of honoring others. Let's listen in.
I might have been dealing with some vacillators on my in my personal life this weekend, and I had to use this phrase, if you can't or won't speak gently to me, I'll have to back away from you. Most of my clients and our callers here at New Life reach out because they're being mistreated by someone in their lives, often spouse and children. Maybe the mistreatment is swearing, yelling, threatening divorce, slamming doors, punching walls, driving aggressively, all the way to domestic violence and substance use. Boundaries, we talk about this a lot on the show, but they are difficult to implement. And I want to remind you how well they work. But maybe it's not how you think they'll work. They do not and cannot guarantee that they'll change the perpetrator in your life. Instead, what they do is empower the victim and clarify standards. They make a way out for the victim. They often do motivate the perpetrator to change. And if that isn't going to happen, they clarify that the relationship may not be worth repairing. The way to acquire boundaries is to identify what you're willing to tolerate and why you're allowed to decide what you will and won't tolerate. And I think for Christian women, this can be very difficult because we might believe, well, aren't you always supposed to turn the other cheek? Shouldn't I always submit no matter how bad it is? The Bible has a lot to say about this. If you allow an angry man to continue to be angry and you save him from the consequences of his anger, he'll be angry again. And we are allowed to back away from people that we've warned, that we've asked to change, and they won't. We can back away. My son, over the weekend, was harsh and disrespectful to me. And I let him know, if you can't or won't speak to me gently, I'll have to back away from you and I'll have to remove privileges. You could change right now if you want to be kind to me. But if you can't or you won't, you're going to start to lose some things in your life. His friend was on the way over and we said, you can't have a friend over if you can't treat mom well. My husband backed me up in this. The friend came over and we had to say, we're so sorry. We're no longer available for you to hang out at our house. My son still would not break. And sometimes you have to augment your boundaries or scaffold your boundaries. So then I let him know, well, you won't be able to see our Friday night movie night. You won't be able to have our fun fast food dinner with us. He didn't care. It took several hours for him to change his mind. Eventually, he came out and said, could I apologize? Could I have a redo? And I asked, why did you change your mind? What happened in there? He said, I got bored and hungry. They're not great motivators, but boundaries allow people to get lonely, to get hungry for the pleasure of our company. And if they care enough, they will respond to our boundaries over time, and we can help you develop them.
Coming in today, I knew it was your birthday, and I thought, how many times do we actually honor people? How important it is to honor people. It's weird. We have birthdays and then people honor us this one time a year. But I started thinking about how often we actually miss moments of just sending love, sending a word of affirmation, delighting in someone, acknowledging something good that someone did. And maybe I'm coming from a place of growing up in a home where I have something that I call wounds of omission. Wounds of omission are actually trauma events, but they're kind of the silent but deadly type. They're the type where maybe you've grown up in a home where you weren't seen, you weren't heard, you weren't delighted in, you weren't acknowledged, because there could have been addiction going on in your family. There could have been mental illness going on. You might have had a parent who grew up and was depressed. And so they were so shut down that they weren't really aware of you. You might be someone like myself who was a latchkey kid, right? Who grew up in a home where Gilligan's Island and I Dream of Jeannie became your parents, Mr. Rogers. Mm-hmm. Some people talk about how important these people are. But with those wounds of omission, you know, people kind of minimize. We often minimize these and say, well, you know, it's not like I was beat. You know, I wasn't sexually molested or anything like that. And so, but you minimize what you didn't get. To be acknowledged, to be seen, to be heard, to be loved. So I just want to challenge us today to think about what would it look like if you were to open your eyes, open your ears, open your heart, look around, and begin to send some words of affirmation to those that are around you. And it's okay if it hasn't been someone you've talked to in a while, right? It might even feel weird or awkward to send them a text out of context. But you know what? We crave that. Mm-hmm. We need that. It builds up our heart, builds up our self-image, builds up our integrity, our care for ourselves. So anyway, it's the gift that keeps on giving.
I love that. I have some friends that are really good at that. One of my girlfriends, Fish, just randomly will send me hugs, or just randomly will say, just thinking about you, I love you. And it brightens your day. Mm-hmm. You know?
We need it. We need it.
If you've been around New Life for a while, you remember that Dr. John Townsend was one of our originals. I guess you could say he was one of the first, like, you know, beginners, opening time, you know, all that theme about spring. John has continued to impact the lives of so many through his work through the Townsend Institute at Concordia University. This program is for people who are interested in leadership, counseling, coaching, PhD, for training and education. We've had a lot of New Life friends who have gone through this program, and it's excellent. You can check it out at drtownsend.com. John was on the program recently. Here's a call with me and Nancy. It's always an honor to work with John. Let's listen in.
Nancy in Paducah, Kentucky, listening on WDXR. Welcome to New Life Live. Nancy.
Hi, how are you guys doing today?
Doing well, thank you.
Good, thank you. I have a question. I'll try to make it short and sweet. I have three kids. On my second marriage, I had a very bad marriage first time around, verbally and emotionally abused by my ex. So the three kids suffered. My youngest is the one that suffered the most. Now, he is 22, going for his master's in counseling, and we've had a strained relationship since the divorce, and that's been about 15 years ago. And now that he's in counseling, he thinks he knows it all, right? So we go back and forth, And my thing is, how can I respond to him in love, in a Christian manner, so that because I feel disrespected when he comes back at me saying things like, you're the one that needs healing. I'm the child. You need to comfort me. So I know it's all the things he's learning in his classes, right?
Well, no good class teaches a 22-year-old that they need to be reparented by their mother. That didn't come from the school. But anyway, continue.
I don't understand that. And then he tells me, you know, you need to go back to your childhood. I said, I had a very happy childhood. I wanted to say, I had a perfect childhood, and then I met your father. But I would never say that to him, you know. So I'm in a really good marriage now, very loving and godly husband. And it makes my husband now upset when my son talks to me the way that he does. I've never felt respected for my three kids because of the way my ex talked about me in front of the kids. So I want that relationship restored. My son wants the relationship restored, but I feel like he judges me, thinking that he is over me spiritually, mentally, every way. So that's my dilemma in a nutshell.
Becky, any thoughts about that? I mean,
I have all kinds of thoughts. I'm thinking, Nancy, I'm wondering, first of all, if you've done any personal work and healing, because the way that you're approaching this is you have a good desire to have connection, but there's this old wound from your ex-husband, who's the father of them, and then this dialogue that's always going on inside of your head. Of, you know, like, if you only knew, I think there's, you know, that your 22-year-old son is kind of calling you out, but he doesn't know the whole story. But I wonder though, Nancy, have you done any personal work healing?
Oh yeah, hugely. I've completely worked through my ex. That was a long time coming and a long time healing. I'm completely over that. But yes, I still see a counselor as of even yesterday, because I had the same question to him. You know, I'm just, and my girls are different. You know, they call me every day. They think, you know, they don't think I'm perfect. They know I've made mistakes, but they know I've done the best that I could have.
I get that. But so the reason why I asked you about doing your own work first is because when you're describing the interaction that you're having with your son, there's a lot of reactivity that's happening, as opposed to just being able to hear him and not engage in trying to set the record straight about all the things, but to describe the way that you want to have the relationship. It's going to come from what you will accept and won't accept, but not... this sounds very, like, it's interesting, like you said, John, for a 22-year-old to talk like that, there's a disconnect in what he's learning as well. But, you know, I want you to be able to move into a responsive stance as opposed to reactive. But, John, what do you have to say about it?
Yeah, first off, Nancy, sorry about that. I mean, you know, it hurts when an adult child does what they do, and I can hear it in your voice. I have a little system that I use in these situations that I want to share with you, if that's okay.
Sure.
It comes from the idea of humility and vulnerability, and it won't be easy, but it works probably 80% of the time when we have an estranged or attacking or critical or canceling adult child, is you take the initiative. No way for him to come and say you're an awful whatever. You take the initiative and you say, I'm glad you want to get closer to me. And you've said that, and I do too. And I want to take the first step, and here it is. I want some time with you where I'm going to bring an 8.5 by 11 legal pad and a pen. And sweetheart, I want you to tell me everything that you are estranged from me about, what you don't like. And apparently he's pretty good about that already, but I want him to get that, as Becky said, not in reactivity where it hurts you and wounds you, but where you're just sitting there kind of calmly saying, I'm going to write down everything you've got against me. And what I'm going to do, and I'm not going to edit and say, no, that can't be true, or you're distorted there. No, you just say, I'm listening. I've got some clarifying questions, but I'm going to get the list. It might take an hour, okay? I mean, you got to be strong.
Right.
You know, you're going to have a lot of support behind you. And then you say, now, when I do this, if you're up for this, I'm going to go away for about a week or two and do my own thing and pray and bring my counselor. And everything that you've got in here that is true, that I need to change, I will change, and I will commit to change. And I want to have another meeting where I can say, okay, I'm doing my work, and see what you think. Now, one or two things will happen, Nancy. One will go, I've got a mother I never thought I had. This is wonderful, and I need to repent, and I need to change. Now, that's a home run. Or he may say, well, that's not enough. And then that's when you say, well, I'm glad we know that. When can we see a couples counselor? When can we see, not a married couple, but a mother and an adult son counselor, because it's just gone beyond my realm of competence. And then he has to have skin in the game, too. And this works a lot.
What do you think, Nancy?
I love that. I am willing to do whatever it takes to restore our relationship.
There you go.
Whatever. I love that idea. Thank you.
If you're willing to take a few hits and keep a tough skin, good things can happen.
That's the tough part. To be able to listen to this conversation for an hour.
It's so hard.
And just not say anything like, wait, no, that's not true.
No, but instead saying, okay, how do you spell that?
That's perfect.
But it requires a lot, but it's really effective. Because then people go, okay, you're not telling me and dismissing me and editing me. You're saying, I'm in your well and I get it.
Yeah.
Whether I agree or not, whether it's true or not, I'm going to write it down and process it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it also gives you clarity as the listener to hear what's the story in his head is. Like, you can't defend yourself against something that you have no idea what their thought process is. But you're also not going to, like, I love what you said, John, about you don't want to say, nope, that's not true. I get you. I hear what you're saying about me. And we'll get through it, but
it's the way it works. I got a lot of this from Proverbs, where it says, a person's heart are deep waters, but a person of understanding draws them out. And your son, for right or wrong, needs to be drawn out. Don't let him abuse you. Abuse is not okay.
Right.
He can be critical, but not abusive. But when we draw somebody out, it builds a spiritual bridge in between us and them, and all of a sudden the defenses get less.
Right. All right, Nancy, so get yourself a legal pad, a couple of pens, two pens, just in case one runs out of ink, because that's the worst thing when you're right. Wait a minute, hold on. And legal pads are on sale at Staples this week. So how do I know that?
I don't know.
Oh,
my goodness.
Now let's return to the opening theme now with Dr. Jackie McHarris sharing about depression. Dr. Jim Burns and Dr. Sherry Denham Keffer will be talking about parents' heartbreak and the complications of relationships. Then we're going to hear from Chris Williams as he shares about what keeps us from connection. Let's listen in.
So today I'm thinking about depression. It was a gloomy day. And so I'm not a big rain person. And so as I was trying to think, what do I want to talk about this morning? Depression is what came up for me. I've been working with several people and I'm noticing depression looks different on different people. It can look like withdrawal and isolation. It can look like a lack of interest in things that they usually enjoy. Sometimes we don't notice it, though, because the person is an introverted person in their nature and they're a quiet person. And so we don't notice that something is off. And if you have friends or family, or you yourself are feeling like you're withdrawing more, or you're thinking your friends or family are less available to you or not answering calls, check and see, ask the question, are you feeling depressed? I realize that when I talk with people, they think that I'm so direct. And what I say is, well, it's a question, and that's the question I want answered. I have a tendency to ask the question I want answered, whereas a lot of people will find other maybe softer ways around the actual issue. But I think it's okay to be direct, and it lets a person know that you see them and that they matter and that you're concerned. It doesn't have to be judgment. And so, you know, watch your tone so that it's not judgmental, but that it's warm and that it's loving and that it says, hey, I care about you and I see something and I just want you to know I'm here. Oftentimes when people are depressed, they think no one sees them, no one cares, yes. No one notices, uh-huh. No one's going through that. And the world is challenging right now. And we are energy and we live in an energy field. And so we're all feeling what our counterparts and our colleagues and our friends and our family are going through without even knowing that they're going through things. And so I think it is important to ask people, hey, how are you doing? You look a little down today. And to ask with the intention of listening to a response. Too often we say, how are you doing? And keep walking.
Jackie, do you think it's even okay to ask, have you ever had thoughts about wanting to run away, wanting to die, or even hurt yourself?
Absolutely. And that's a tough one. People are like, oh, I would never ask that. Well, let me encourage you, please, if you think someone is going to harm themselves, if they are going to take their own life, ask them directly, have you had thoughts of harming yourself? Have you had thoughts of taking your life? Even if it shocks them that you ask the question, it opens up a conversation. And again, in those situations, people say they didn't think anybody would care. You know, no one would notice or the world would be better without me. And the fact is, the world wouldn't be better without you. The world might be better without this pain you're suffering, but that's something we can get into a relationship, whether that's a counseling relationship or a life recovery group relationship, and start to deal with some of the pain and the deep loneliness.
We're enslaved by the things we keep secret.
Absolutely.
And God's response, his answer to that is confess to one another, pray for one another so that you may be healed. But it starts with the questions being asked and then this enough safety to answer it honestly.
What do you do when the person answers, I'm fine. How are you?
So I will say, well, that's interesting. I'm glad you're fine. You just feel a little less than that. Maybe think about it, and we'll talk about it later. And then I just keep going and just leave that there with them.
Yeah.
She's good, Ryan.
Yeah, she is. Man.
Today, I want to talk about one principle that people, you know, need to be thinking about. Today, I'm thinking about parents of adult children or even teens when the parents are heartbroken or there's something else going on in your family. I'm speaking this week, and I'm talking on complicated relationships. Well, we all have complicated relationships, but a lot of times we have heartbreak. And, you know, what do you do when your children have strayed from their faith? What do you do when they violate your values? And it can be a young or and a major thing or even a minor thing. But here's the principle. Okay, you ready? Lead with love. That's what Jesus did. He always led with love. Sherry, we had a conversation in a previous broadcast where you talked about that.
With Jason.
Exactly.
If you haven't heard Jason's, we would encourage you to go listen. But that was on Wednesday,
right? Exactly. And you don't have to agree with someone to lead with love. And Jesus did that all the time. He didn't agree with the prostitute. He didn't agree with tax collectors. He didn't agree with, you know, some of the political and religious leaders. But he still led with love. And I use a phrase a lot after I think of the word kindness matters when I need to lead with love. And it's just choose love and move forward. So it's possible to choose love and move forward. That doesn't mean, again, you have to agree with them. And I get my inspiration from God because, you know, he is the greatest example of showing love and kindness even when we blow it, even in our own lives. So throughout the Bible, we are reminded of God's unconditional and unfailing love. I mean, no, I love you. God says to us, and some of you need to hear this today, I love you no matter how you are acting. Do you hear that? Your actions and my love are totally different issues. And I think we have to do that with our own children. You know, sometimes we have to say, if we pull back or we get angry and then we pout and whatever, well, then they think, well, you love me when I'm good and you don't love me when I'm bad. No, God loves us when we're good or bad. And we have to, as parents, do the same thing. Now, we have to hold boundaries, hold consequences for, you know, actions and things. It's an amazing thought here, but God loves us not for what we do, but for who we are. And we are his children. I love this in Romans 2:4. God's kindness is intended to lead you toward repentance. That's how we move toward wanting to be right people, full people. It's through God's kindness. So as parents, and if you happen to have an adult child who strayed, It's not easy to show love in the midst of some of their poor decisions, but kindness may be the greatest impact and willingness in their life. So acceptance doesn't mean approval when you're leading with love. So know that you can accept someone and you can show them kindness and whatnot. So I love you for who you are, and I love you for where you are. Those are important things for us to learn, and we can't, and we have an example. It's God.
Yeah. Sherry?
I just go preach, right? Yeah. You know, and it's funny, not to throw a curveball into what you said, but I want to add a Lego onto that. It's interesting, God's love for us, the very parental, how Jesus modeled that. And you're talking about being a parent and to lead with love. What I'm thinking about is, what do you do when it's your partner?
Yeah.
And, you know, because you're talking about unconditional love.
Yeah.
But I'm like, when you're married to somebody and they're in the middle of an affair, that's when you don't lead with love. You lead with safety and you have some boundaries. Yeah. And it doesn't, boundaries are loving, right?
Boundaries and safety are actually loving.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I think it's very possible to have a tough love. When we think of tough, we'll be angry or whatever. I think a tough love says allow them to experience some of the circumstances. So if there's terrible things that are happening with a partner, then I think we have to run to safety.
Yeah.
And I think it's very important that we set up boundaries. But I don't see that not as love. To me, love is not just the feelings. Love sometimes is saying the only way for me to help you as an addict is to put on some boundaries here.
Right.
And here's kind of how the boundaries are going to be. The only way for me to show you deep love is to not allow porn or not allow these things to come into our home. That's love, because it's the only way that's going to help that relationship. So we, our definition of love, and I think it's because of movies a lot of times, I think it's too romance and all that, but there's a tougher love here. Mm-hmm. And there's a love when we have to say, do you hear your words? Do you understand what actions I'm taking this action out of love, and that is I'm running to safety right now.
Yeah. I have a Wonder Woman shield when I'm talking about, I bought it, you know, a little something I got at Halloween, but I use it all the time when I'm talking about boundaries, because boundaries, I say oftentimes when someone's hurting us, we want to take our shield and we want to like bonk them over the head with it, which that's more punishment.
Right.
Boundaries, I say, are what's behind the shield.
Yeah,
that's
good.
You. The Bible talks about guard your heart, for it's the wellspring of life. Everything you do flows through it. So when I've got the Wonder Woman shield up, right, and I am thinking, what do I need to protect myself? Mm-hmm. Because this person's hurting me. That is a healthy boundary, which is loving. It's loving you, and it's creating a dilemma. It's creating something that here's the shield, and they're like doing something bad, and they're like, you know, they hit the shield and they slide down. But that's the impact of the harm. So,
right.
That's loving.
Sure. And when we hear our pastors talk about unconditional love, sometimes we who can be codependent, then we join in it's not a love. It's a codependency that's actually not good, because we're kind of coming in and trying to, you know, help them. We'll just be the doormat and let them run all over us. That's not going to help the relationship. Mm-hmm. And it's not the kind of love. Jesus didn't give that kind of love.
Yeah.
You know, we see angry. When Jesus sees children who are being hurt or abused, you know, he's angry.
Yeah.
Well, that's even, you can have a righteous anger and still show love. And that's what I think our God does.
Yeah.
I think it's a broader definition, very key and very important.
Yeah. Cool.
I just got off the call with a church governance issue.
Okay.
And so these can be complicated. They can be messy. They can be difficult. But there is a principle here that I'm looking at and working with that is almost universal. It's for all of us. And that is, the church is in a messy situation because of a lack of humility, because of a lack of recognition when something's off and something's wrong, and the ability to receive that feedback well.
And so the church is like a relationship?
The church is like a relationship. And I'm using church broadly,
yes,
you know, because obviously there's individuals involved in this, and we're going to protect all of that, of course. But one of the things that I think harms us and puts us at liability in our relationships and our work in life is this inability to receive the truth where we're off, where we're broken, mm-hmm. where we're not yet there, where mm-hmm. sin may be active and sin may be real. And it's this weird thing because I would say this, God works with the raw material of reality for his redemption. Mm-hmm. And the raw material is that stuff inside of us. And that reality is important to come out, to show the truth, to show what it is. And God's redemption, his hope, his grace works with all of it to make something different, make something new. But when the initial barrier is to block it, defend it, deny it, all of the defense mechanism that we had, we just block out God's best and God's goodness for us. One of the main reasons that that happens is because something has happened in our past mm-hmm. that has created a wound, has created a hurt and a pain point that remains unhealed and unresolved. Pain by its nature requires defense. And so when we have this unresolved pain in our life and we are defended against it, mm-hmm. then we can't allow the healing in. And so it's no secret to me why the Gospel of Luke, in the way that Luke describes Jesus' work on planet Earth, is always seeming to come with healing and forgiveness, mm-hmm. healing and redemption. And it speaks to the heart of what we're about here. If we are carrying these old wounds, if we're carrying these pain points, and it's creating defenses, what we can't see is it's creating a prideful block of what's best and good. Mm-hmm. Listen, we're all human beings. We're all flawed. We all come short of the glory of God. Let's get into the specifics of what that is for our life so God can do his work. And that's really at the heartbeat of what we're doing here at New Life.
Mm-hmm. Chris, I love that description. It reminds mm-hmm. me of a child with a splinter in their mm-hmm. hand.
Yeah.
And they don't want anybody to pull that splinter out because it's too painful, yet that's the best thing for them. Another one of the originals joined us, Dr. Henry Cloud. Henry shares about his personal mission statement. And then following, we're going to hear from Dr. Jill Hubbard about the Olympics. P.S. Did you know that you can say you're an Olympic hopeful? It's not like there's a registration form or anything. Just kidding. Let's listen in. One of the things I thought about when I was thinking about, what do we want to hear from Henry? And I said, what do you want to talk about? And you said your life's work, which has been psychology and biblical integration, has really mm-hmm. proved itself true over the years. I mean, it's pretty amazing, God's plan for our life, right?
Yeah, we only know in the rearview mirror, right? Which what's that old saying? Yeah, we make our plans and God laughs. Mm-hmm. We don't know the steps it's going to take, but they're generally, you know, people feel like at some point you've got sort of a life calling, right? Mm-hmm. Or life direction. How you end up doing that changes. But my mission statement when I was 21 was I wanted to try to understand and show how the Bible can make you well instead of crazy.
Wow.
Mm. And
that says a lot.
That's been fun. And it actually can.
That God is the great psychologist.
I wrote a book last year called Why I Believe, about the whole journey, both personally and all of that. And the subtitle of it was The Psychologist's Thoughts on Suffering, Miracles, Science, and Faith. And the science section was where I dealt with all the obstacles when I came to faith that I had to find answers to. But there's one section in there that says there's one area of science where I can claim a little more expertise, and that's the field of psychology and how the science of psychology proved the Bible to me mm-hmm. over and over and over and over and over again. How, you know, what good science does is it validates, it looks at and examines the creation. And when it does that, it finds things. I've come to love a phrase, one of my favorite verses says exactly what the science shows. And so it's almost a worshipful experience every day of learning more about how God has wired us together and also how he's spoken to that and given his answers.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And I think even all of the work that you've done, even you're just continuing to give that hope to so many people, Henry, and we're grateful for it because we benefit from it. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, just the millions of people who are looking for hope, and we know the way, right? I mean, it's great. Henry, your work is prolific, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But I said before the show, I was talking
to... tired?
Yeah.
That would be why you're tired, yes. I mean, that's for another show. But but you know, the incredible thing is, you know, the word boundaries, I don't even know if anybody knew what that was when that book first came out. We just didn't even, and especially in the Christian community, right? Like, if you're a good Christian, you don't say no. Mm. And I was thinking about, you know, so many people who struggle with saying no. And I know we're not going to do the whole show with boundaries, and we are going to get some calls. But I just, Henry, what would you say to somebody who believes in Jesus, follows Jesus, they're doing their life, and they can't say no because Jesus wouldn't say no? That's what their belief is.
Well, I don't know what Jesus they're talking about. But,
right.
First one. He actually said, quote, let your yes be yes and your no be no. Mm-hmm. So when you think Jesus doesn't believe in no, then ask him if you can be God and see if he says yes or no. I mean, it's built into his image. And ask him if you, oh, I want to go commit this terrible sin because it's going to feel good. And see if he doesn't say no or has already said no. So here's the thing. You know, when you're talking about Christians struggling and why it kind of caught on. No is built in from the image of God. No is built in to every human. If you take a baby, okay, mm-hmm. a baby, this is fascinating. You know, you look at videos and as they're starting to become conscious and whatever, something that is good, like David said, God, you taught me to trust you at my mother's breast. They learn to say no. And when something is good, you see them, their whole system opens up to it. We're supposed to engage and say yes to things that are life-giving. We're mm-hmm. built that way. Mm-hmm. But something unpleasurable or sound, what does the baby do? They start to do this. They turn away from it, and they're nodding no before they ever know the word. Their system is saying no. Your immune system says no to bad stuff. Well, roll the clock forward about 15 months, 18 months, at least two, when they're two, they've learned a word to that. And I remember we were trying to teach our oldest, Olivia, to hear no. She loved to say it too, you know, and they learn no. Then they run around, Olivia, do this. No, do this. Mm-hmm. No, no. It comes out so easily. I mean, I remember one day, Becky, I said, Olivia, breathe. And she goes, no, I just want to see if she loved the word.
Well, they learn no before they learn. Happens. Yes.
Yes, they do.
The system is going to say it. Okay, mm-hmm. But something happened.
Mm. I love
they
it.
They say no,
it.
Maybe to an abusive or controlling parent. Mm-hmm. And that no gets shut down. Mm. Or they say no and they get manipulated by guilt. Or they say no with their body and everything in them when they're being abused, but the power from the outside overrides their no. So that no muscle either gets conflicted or broken. It was in there. Mm-hmm. It was there all along, but it got wounded. Mm-hmm. Or sometimes you got modeled into don't say no. Maybe you had a codependent enabling parent with an alcoholic or something. Mm-hmm. And it disappears. But Jesus came to seek and to save that which was lost. Seeking mm-hmm. means he's looking for your no muscle. Save means to heal. And lost in the Greek word actually means broken beyond repair. So a lot of people's mm-hmm. no muscle is broken, but Jesus wants to seek it and to heal it and get it working to say no to evil, inside or outside, and say yes to life.
I love it. I love mm-hmm. it.
Last time we were all together, our last caller we were talking to was having some marital issues, and we were talking about working at it. So what I'm going to talk about today in a roundabout way is you have to work at it. Mm-hmm. Okay? So have you all been watching the Olympics?
Yes. Mm.
So I was away when they started, and so when I got back, I started watching them. And, I'm just in awe of them. And so aware of my limitations as a human now and as I'm aging. And it's, yeah. But just realizing nobody gets there by accident, right? It takes huge, dedicated effort to get to the Olympics. Very few make it, and even fewer medal, right? It's the elite of athletes. And I was thinking about, because my stepdad actually was in the finals for the 1960 Summer Olympics. Yes, we always, as I had to call him and ask, because we have it as he was runner up. He just missed going by a hair. He's a very humble man. He said, well, I wasn't quite that close. He says, I was close, but not close. And he said some of the winners in the Olympics were taught by his coach. And so, anyway.
What was his event?
So he was the 1500 meters in track and field. And this, he did all this while he was a sophomore at UCLA, married with a baby. Wow. So he's an amazing person who's very humble. He's been successful, but the thing that when we look back at him, he's still here. Is that he puts effort towards relationships. Oh. He's my stepdad, but he's the only grandpa my kids have known. Mm. And you can't tell the difference. My kids grew up with him. He's a wonderful, fun grandpa. So he puts effort towards that. Recently, this past year, I have been to 4 weddings. Not a funeral yet. That's coming, but 4 weddings. All the weddings have had at least one partner who has been married previously and had a failed relationship and has gone through intense heartache, regardless of age. All different age levels have had that. And they have all worked at self-examination, reflection, have gotten therapy, and looked at their own part so they could be wiser and healthier. So their weddings have been stories of redemption and faithfulness and celebrating and vulnerability. Like you hear it in the vows. It's like, wow, they've been through so much. And this is such a gold medal moment, right? Mm-hmm. Of winning and conquering. And we all want stories of redemption. And sometimes it can seem forever to come. Like, God, why aren't you answering my prayers? It's taking forever. It doesn't just happen by accident. Our lives, our relationships, and we get knocked down over and over and over again. So we don't want to settle. We want to keep working at it. And at the end of the day, the Olympics that I want to be in is the Olympics of relationships.
Yes.
Right? People are my hobby. That's good. I want to do relationships well, and that's what I keep striving for.
Finally, we're going to hear from Laura Manja McDonald, and she's a speaker at Restore and Intimacy in Marriage and an author, followed by J.J. West, who speaks at our Intimacy in Marriage Intensive as well as Every Man's Battle Workshop. J.J. also hosts the Every Man's Battle podcast. Let's listen in.
I grew up in the country, and I know you need good tread to stay on the road, right? Or to four-wheel drive or whatever, you need good tread. So good friends are like good tread on our tires, right? And so what is that? It's God's design. Good friends give us the traction we need to stay on course in life. They celebrate the highs with us. They're with us during the lows. They stand with us. They speak truth. They heal our hearts, console us during our losses in life. We all need good friends. And it's because God designed us for connection, right? He says that we are not to do this alone. However, a lot of people that I've come across in life say, well, you know, that's just not for me. It's just me and the Lord. But the Lord gave us the body of Christ. We need community to heal. We need to be able to bring our vulnerable parts that got hurt early on into relationship. And Ecclesiastes tells us that it's a beautiful scripture in 4:9-10 that says, Two are better than one because they have a good return for their labor. If either of them falls down, one can help the other up. But pity anyone who falls and has no one to help them. That's a sad place to be. And often that we see that right in the middle of the church. People love Jesus. They show up to volunteer. They give and pour out for great ministry, but no one knows them. Mm-hmm. And we were created to be known. And until we can be known, life is going to be daunting to us. It's going to be overwhelming. So even though the views are valid for thinking, oh, friendships just aren't for me, that's distorted thinking. So what do we do? First of all, we've got to go back in to heal in healthy relationships. And that's going to be counterintuitive because that's the place I was hurt. And if my nervous system has all this download, don't let them see all of you. Until all of us is seen, we can't be healed. All of us, you know, what we hold back will hold us hostage. But what we bring in the light will heal us. And that's God's design. So here's the three things that we can work on. The first thing we must do is we don't outgrow what we didn't get. Right? It's still there. We have to bring those parts. The second thing is our nervous system will recognize this, so we need a safe, structured setting, and that can begin with a therapist. The second thing is open up our hearts. Like Paul said, we're not rejecting you, you're rejecting us. And the third thing is get in that structured setting. I've been working with a group for 6 years where they practice this, and that's what we can do. And that's how good friends, we can learn how to choose a good friend.
Every year I try to do a annual read through the Bible in a year plan. And so over the weekend, I was down in Miami for a wedding and the reading plan called for some passages in Exodus. And I came across the story in Exodus 18 where Moses is visited by his father-in-law, Jethro. And, you know, Jethro is excited about all that the Lord has done in bringing them out of Egypt, rescuing the Israelites from slavery there and setting them up into the promised land. And then the next day, Moses is sitting in judgment. He's presiding over all the cases of all the people. And it's from, you know, morning until night. And Jethro pulls his son-in-law aside and he says, listen, what you're doing isn't good. You're going to wear yourself out. So in other words, Jethro says to his son-in-law, you haven't learned to delegate. You're taking on too much. He says, this isn't good. And so what you need to do, you need to learn to delegate. So pick out some trustworthy men who can serve as, you know, under judges under you. And so they can handle the basic cases. And if there's anything that's too difficult, then that should come to you. And in so doing, you won't wear yourself out and the people won't be worn out waiting around all day to have their case heard. Now, Jethro says a very pivotal thing in verse 23. He says, if God so commands, and Moses listens to him. So he doesn't just take Jethro's advice. He also checks in with God, and God says, yeah, this is a good plan. And so that's the new plan moving forward. So I want to ask the audience this. Do you feel worn out? Do you feel like it's all on you? And that if you aren't taking responsibility for everything around you, it's just not going to get done. And then you're just exhausted. My challenge to you would be, maybe you need to take a step back and ask the Lord, is this need that I'm trying to meet what you've called me to meet? Or is it just a need and that someone else may need to step into that role? And learn to delegate and learn to invite God into that process, not just assume if there's a need, I'm the one that's supposed to meet it. That way we don't wear ourselves out because, hey, there's still 11 months left of this year, right? And so we need to be willing to share the load with others so that we don't get burned out and then we crash.
What happens if you feel like you don't have anyone that you can trust to
give to well, ask for help.
That is often the problem, yeah. right? Nobody yeah. can do it yeah. as well as I can.
uh-huh. yeah, yeah. So we pray, God, provide the people that need to meet this need, and then trust that He will. But when we have to take a step back to let other people step into that role. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we don't give other people the opportunity because we believe, well, no one can do it quite as well as me. Which, you know, I mean, most of the time that's true, right? Not so much, right? We need others. We need yes. help.
If you've listened this far in the 99 for the One Spotlight, you realize this is now the closing. Thank you for being part of changing the world. If you didn't know already, your faithful partnership has impacted lives that we may never know this side of eternity. Share New Life with someone today. This spotlight is a good one to share. You never know who may feel lost in their life or relationship. Together, we can celebrate their new life when they are found. If you haven't discovered yet, we have an app that's free. You can download it and listen to the program anytime. Also, you can interact with resources there. Of course, you can always go to newlife.com, check out things there. As well as our number is still the same, 1-800-NEW-LIFE. You can call us or call the show sometime and be on as a caller. We would love to have you there. We're grateful for you and we're praying for you. Until next time.